This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hszc.org.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Recently, somebody was asking me about doing some other practices. This person was regretting that there wasn't time to practice zazen. Because he'd made a commitment to do some of these other practices. So we talked about that a little bit, and I said, I reminded us both that Dogen said, well, you know, the important thing is to, I don't know what the Japanese is, but to grasp, that is, to appreciate the heart of zazen. Maybe the translation grasp is a little unfortunate because that suggests, you know, to grab something. But of course he doesn't mean that at all. In fact, he means just the opposite. Because the heart of zazen practice is exactly not grasping. So we talked about how if he approaches this person would approach these other practices with this non-grasping heart, he would be doing zazen. So he was encouraged by that. And he no longer felt that he would be forsaking the true path. So he'd been bothered by that thought. So this non-grasping mind is really the heart of not just our path, but the Buddha way. And it's a little bit it's a little tricky, admittedly. The posture, our posture, is sort of yogically optimized to support this non-grasping mind over quite a long time now, some thousands of years probably. And it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, cross-legged, although that maybe has some advantages, but isn't so much cross-legged as the whole notion of kind of balance and openness and uprightness in whatever way is feasible for any given individual. So the canonical posture, that is seated on the ground, cross-legged, maybe with each foot on the opposite thigh, is sort of like Grey's Anatomy. I don't mean the TV show, which I don't think I've ever seen. I mean the book, which is very famous. And I think, I forget, it's been around since, I forget, the 18th or...
1800s. Still referenced.
Still referenced. So Grey's Anatomy, though, has been pointed out, is like nobody's body. There's no body that is exactly Grey's Anatomy. It's like a kind of distillation of sort of every body. So if you were a surgeon and you were operating on someone expecting to find Grey's Anatomy, you'd be disappointed and you might actually do some damage. So Grey's Anatomy is sort of a generalization of each body that's out there in the universe. And same thing with the cross-legged posture that you see in iconography and so forth. That's a distillation of what's possible for each bipedal creature in the universe. So our version of that, each person's version of that, is slightly different. So we each find out what is optimal for our practice of this open-hearted, non-grasping, yogic realization of zazen mind. And it does have something to do with kind of not tilting in any particular direction and letting gravity help us be balanced in such a way that there is a minimum of muscular effort and contraction, which is an analog of what our heart mind is engaged in, that is, not grabbing any particular thing. And since the sentient being, the experience of the sentient being is basically entirely one of grabbing, zazen is sort of the karmic antithesis of that. That is, it's non-grabbing. So naturally, there's sometimes some little... not conflict exactly, but feels a little funny. Especially at first. Sometimes there's a honeymoon period, as you may remember. When you first encounter zazen, sometimes some people, depending on their particular karmic inheritance, may feel, some people will feel like, oh, this is great. And other people feel like, this is horrible. And everything in between, depending on your individual karma. I can't remember whether I felt this was great or horrible or something more neutral. I think I liked the idea a lot when I first went to sit in Los Altos group Suzukiroshi started down there. I think I really liked the idea, and it was a brand new Zendo, and the tatami mats were brand new, and they really smelled wonderful. So this lovely odor and incense, and people already had robes, and it was really, really cool. And there was a nice altar and everything. So I really liked that. And I had just read Three Pillars of Zen. So I sat there waiting for enlightenment. Any day now, it's going to hit me. So that was kind of entertaining. And that was quite a long time ago. So fortunately, I did not have any idea of the length of the actual path ahead. Otherwise, I might have been discouraged. It often takes some time to find a place of develop a sense for the actual balance that's there between the karma of the sentient being, which is one of grasping, and then the inheritance of our actual, if you like, Buddha nature, which is complete openness. And Zazen is the, as Dogen says, is the Dharma gate to this place of, as he says, what does he say? Anraku Homon. You know, bliss and peace. And of course, when people hear that, then what do they usually do? They sit down on their zafu, and then usually there's a very, very strong temptation to kind of hunt for bliss and peace as we may have known it. And this usually immediately produces frustration, because the bliss and peace that Dogen is talking about is not the kind that we have known. And because that bliss and peace is the kind that does not respond to grasping. So this lesson of not grasping anymore generally takes some time to learn or absorb. And then, of course, that lesson itself can't be grasped. So as I'm saying this, I'm thinking, are people feeling more frustrated as I'm talking about this? I hope not. It's certainly not my intention. At the root of this, of course, is the truth that our fundamental nature is ungrasping and ungraspable. And it is this fundamental endowment that is the root of our practice. And is the source of the bliss and peace in Zazen, which does not need to be sought and cannot be sought, and only manifests in the midst of no seeking, no grasping. Inasmuch as we are sentient beings, of course, this generally sets up an expectation that, just as soon as I relinquish my grasping, I can expect that there will be a wave of bliss and peace. And we don't say that that won't be the case, but generally, I think it's the case that it will catch us unawares. For instance, there are these Zen stories where someone has been practicing a while and such and such happens, and then so and so wakes up or something like that. And usually it's the case that so and so recognizes something that has been the case for some while. So we may recognize that we may recognize something about our body-mind that has been true maybe for a long while and we never noticed before. We may recognize the maybe the trace of peace and bliss and we simply never knew what it was. And it was never visible in all the noise and movement created by this endless grasping that is the inheritance of the sentient being, the inheritance of karmic life. So this Sazen heart of no grasping is, as Dogen pretty clearly says, doesn't really doesn't have anything to do with this posture or any posture. It certainly has nothing to do with Japanese furniture or clothing or Japanese chanting or Chinese chanting or anything else. So it can be found in any practices or observances or traditions or lineages. Doesn't even have to be particularly Buddhist, so-called. However, it is true that certain traditions seem to give it a little more prominence, whereas other traditions you might have to dig a little bit deeper. The theistic traditions seem to squirrel it away a little bit, make it a little harder to find. I think it's there too, but you have to dig. So wherever you may find yourself, you can allow this non-grasping mind practice to come to the fore and animate whatever practice you're doing, whatever your circumstance. Note: I don't say you can actually make that happen, because that would be kind of another contrivance. But you can allow it to manifest by, well, kind of not grabbing at anything, and you can facilitate that by arranging the body mind in a way that supports no grasping. And you can learn what that is for your particular body just with a little experimentation. And sometimes with a little assistance from others. It also helps to have a group of spiritual friends, such as you guys. It's very, very encouraging for me to have spiritual friends. It's lovely to see you here this morning. The sangha is kind of is a kind of a body. I don't know if that's that's true for all of you, but it is, I know it's true for me, that there's a kind of an upset in the Sangha. I feel it bodily somehow. Partly I'm sure that's neurosis on my part, but also the Sangha is often spoken of as a body. So there's some truth to a shared psychophysical reality. So that it's important how we care for one another as a body. I, just like the rest of you, mustn't forget that. And it's one of many things I must remember to care for. It's not such an easy life, but I don't think I'd trade it or anything else. There are, of course, lives of kind of less awareness. I don't know if that's the right word, but for instance, one could be, I don't know, a clam buried in the sand somewhere and letting the tide bring you degrees of nourishment as it sweeps in and out. But I don't think I'd choose that, although karma may foist that upon one in some future life. But one can see humans who have tried to kind of opt for that, tried to sort of decrease their level of sensitivity. There's a gent who winds up on our front step here from time to time, kind of curls up next to the plant on the front step, and usually in a state of inebriation. And you can tell he's tried to kind of decrease his level of awareness, because when it's not at the usual level, it's kind of unbearable for him. And I can appreciate how he must feel. But the price for that blunting of awareness is very, very severe. Price is very, very, very high. You can tell by looking at him that he's made himself very ill. And it's been some years that he's been doing that, so I can't imagine he's going to survive too much longer. Just our normal awareness is almost like, our skin is so sensitive. Sometimes, just sitting zazen here, this ungrasping mind, somebody just shutting a car door outside, it's like something goes, tick, this, the skin just feels it. Never mind somebody yelling at us or even yelling at somebody else in the street. This is actually our ordinary sensitivity of the human being. So it's hardly surprising that our temptation is to blunt that in various ways. It's hardly surprising. So there's an entire industry of blunting out there. With innumerable flavors, right? And we're about to have a 3-day weekend, a festival of blunting, which probably began after lunch yesterday and will extend well into the night, Monday, right? The festival of blunting will go on.
Smoke blunt?
No, I'd forgotten about that one. I suppose that's right. So, you know, I can't blame people, you know. And when I have a migraine, which is still relatively frequent, even with the new medicine I have, it's even worse because then the pain is like ratchets it up. So the medicine I take is a kind of blunting, and it's like, oh yeah, I see why, you know, people want to do this, because it's like, it's just, ouch, you know, it's like too much. And yet that is not just the legacy of the sentient being, it's also our awake nature, our Buddha nature, which is like crystal, like a perfect crystal glass that rings every time it's touched. This is also our awake nature. Buddha nature does that. And I don't think we'd want to trade that for something else. Someday we were going to read about it, study hour on Thursday, except nobody was here, so we didn't. Shushan gave a talk to his community once where he said, something like, ordinary people possess it thoroughly, and they don't know it. The saints possess it thoroughly, and they don't understand it. If ordinary people understand it, if an ordinary person understands it, then he or she is a saint. If a saint understands it, then he or she is an ordinary person. Take care. And he left the hall. He must have had great fun back in those days. So, I don't know if you guys are ordinary persons or saints, but either way, you possess it thoroughly. And that's why we all ring like crystal glasses with each phenomenon that comes to us. And that's both wondrous and, well, kind of excruciating. So to take our posture of balance and allow this mind that does not grasp to ring is the practice of the Buddhas. And it's amazing how it clarifies things. Quite amazing. Remember, this non-grasping is not something that you do. You just sort of stop doing stuff. So don't saddle yourself with another thing called, now I have to not grasp. To be blunt about it. Do you have any questions this morning?
You spent some time on grasping emotion of it, and I was kind of waiting for aversion to come up
right.
as well, because I may be mistaken, and I may be deluding myself, but my impression of myself is that it's easier for me to not grasp than to not be averse. Mm-hmm. In other words, that if there's a kind of central fault line in me, it would be anger. As I found possibly is the characteristic American trait, and often seems to be a characteristic imperfect as we are Zen trait, and so I wondered if you would care to kind of relate those things.
The Sanskrit for grasping is upadana, and that's actually shorthand for two kinds. And one is to pull towards, and the other is simply to push away. Mm-hmm. So it actually covers both. Mm-hmm. The kind that pulls towards and the kind that is aversive. So it includes both the greedy and the hateful. So both are included. And being a hate type myself, I identify with what you say. I mostly relate to the world in terms of loathing. So, and if I'm near a French bakery, greed is a close second. So, according to Buddha, those are just flip sides of the same coin. Yes.
With we're speaking now about anger and the pushing away, sort of when anger flares up and there's like a striking out kind of motion from somebody, is, and then relating that to when you're talking about, you know, this dampening down of awareness, where's the correlation kind of between those?
And so you're saying if there's a flaring up of anger
and people are lashing out, is that another way of sort of deadening in a very mm-hmm. kind of perverse way? But
well, I would say probably for me that happens first, because in order for the anger towards another being to come up, I've already blunted my awareness that we are not two. So I've already sort of dropped the ball, and I'm already fumbling a bit with my practice of realizing that there are not two beings here. So that's probably where the blunting has already happened. Mm-hmm. And then it's easy. Mm. When there's separation, then I can all easily relate to the man on the front step. It's like, Are you there again? Didn't I kind of ask you not to sleep on our front step? Right? Especially because sometimes he's very unpleasant, this gentleman. And the other day, one of our other residents asked him to kind of not sleep there, and he took a very martial stance, as though he were going to strike him. Which he didn't, fortunately. And then instead he went, "Well, Hare Krishna." Which is like, "Hare Krishna." Fortunately left. But he can be very unpleasant. So then it's very easy to get into that, okay, now we're separate beings and all kinds of possibly unpleasant things could happen. So that means I've already stepped away from the practice of no separation. And that makes it very easy for things to go wrong. So I would say that dampening down happens first, and then that facilitates anger and various other delusive paths. That's how I would put it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Christopher.
Thanks for your talk. For me, I find a lot of interest in the blending subject, and I often think of, maybe I'm attached to, the translation in the full moon ceremony, where it says, originally pure, don't defile.
Yeah, that is the great awareness.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But to me, like the cushion's blending, clothes are blending, shoes are blunting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what does it mean to live in the city? You know, what is our sort of day-to-day sensitivity? And sort of working with myself, and where is the softness, and where can I be open? Where can I give, and where is it skillful to do something different?
Something different than blending?
No. I mean, in the sense of, you know, what's, you know, sometimes we use the word natural, or, you know, what's natural in this sort of circumstance?
Mm-hmm.
And what, you know, where is the line for compassion for myself,
mm-hmm,
and compassion for others?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the challenge there, at least in my experience, is that line is constantly moving. That is a moving target. And moment by moment, it's a moving target. So there's no easy answer to that. I have to respond to that, again, moment by moment, with each individual, in each individual circumstance, based on my ongoing practice of the way and the precepts. That quote from Dogen's Kyoju Kaimon that you mentioned, interestingly, is the precept of no intoxication. So, intoxication makes paying attention to that line very difficult. So a certain amount of clarity is essential in order to attend to how that line is shifting in my relationships with others. For instance, in the somewhat fraught interactions with the man on the front porch, where the energy or tension may mount rather quickly, especially if he's being belligerent. I need to be not intoxicated, for instance, because he probably is, in order to watch, okay, what is the compassionate response here? And in fact, if I'm actually asking myself that question in that moment, it's already kind of too late. like in kind of the Zen formulation of things, that we have expressions like, here, sparks of lightning are too slow. Like, we're already sort of lagging behind if I'm saying, what's compassionate? And it's like, no, to just be with what's going on right now and see what happens. Don't be querying oneself about what is compassionate right here and now. Just be here with what's happening. And if he slugs you, well then, God knows. Maybe you slug him back. I don't know. I can't answer that now. Right? I have to be on that wavy line right here in this exact moment. And I can't say how I'm going to react. So I don't know if that's speaking to your question. If not, please ask again.
No, I think it does. I think in a sense, though, too, I mean, for me, I guess I feel like I struggle sometimes with, like, the sense of, you know, anger as an intoxicant.
It can be.
Or, you know, food, you know, just where we draw the... For me, perhaps I think about it too much and don't just sort of practice and just go with it enough. But where... you know, just, you know, where indulgence and sort of austerity is finding that middle.
Yeah, well, I practice with that too. And I don't always, you know, I'm not always Johnny on the spot. You know, I sometimes opt for retreating to my room and putting the pillow over my head. I confess to all of you, I do that. And I'm not always pleased that that's the option I've taken. And there are times when I've looked out the window, there he is on the front porch, you know, I'm not going to open the door and deal with it. I'm going to go upstairs and put the pillow over my head. And hopefully, next time I look out the window, he won't be there. And sometimes he isn't. It's like, great. No, I'm not going to deal with it this time. It's like, okay, maybe that's not so great. So, that's probably our human life. And hopefully those times when I do have to deal with it, I will be totally there. And I'll be practicing with it in such a way that I can say, okay, here, lightning is too slow. Let's just deal with it immediately now. And not try to figure anything out. Just be present. And bring all of what this being is to what's happening right under my nose. And let's let that be our practice. And if it's insufficient, too bad.
Speaking of full moon ceremony, will there be one next Saturday?
Oh, Lord. probably is the full moon must be coming up.
Monday.
Well, nobody's ever here on Monday except David, usually. So we'll have to figure out, I'll have to look at the calendar and figure out when we can have a full moon ceremony and some people will be here. So, yeah, maybe Saturday. Thanks for reminding me. Any other questions? No. Very good to see you all here this morning. Thank you very much.